The time is 8:30 a.m. on October 28, 2025, and I've convened a video conference and telephone conference meeting of the Board of Directors of the Texas Life Health Insurance Guarantee Association. This meeting is being conducted pursuant to the Texas Open Meetings Act and the Association's antitrust policy. All information disclosed or discussed is to be used only for the carrying out of the business of the Association. The proper notice of the meeting was filed on October 16, 2025, and published in the Texas Registry in accordance with the Texas Open Meetings Act. A copy of this notice should be attached to the summary of the official minutes of this meeting. A quorum is achieved as all 7 directors have been confirmed as attended in person or by video or audio conference. Also in attendance are Mr. Clyde McHale, Insurance Guarantee Association Executive Director, Bart Coles, General Counsel Dan Price, and TFIDA employees, Jerry Terry, Coppin, Aggregate, and his friend. It is Brandy attending.
Brandy is on and off.
So yeah. Okay, Brandy Nichols. Also from TDI are Vance Hugo, Jeff Jones, John Walker, Sean Morton, and Mandy Bashwitz. All right, item number 1 in our agenda is consideration and possible action on the consent agenda. A summary of the official minutes of the July 29, 2025 meeting of the Board of Directors and ratification of the payment of over fees and expense billing for the second quarter of 2025. So consideration of possible action on the consent agenda.
Second.
Been properly moved and second. Frankly, got here just in time. All in favor?
Aye.
All right, motion carries. Thank you. So, item number 2 is recognition of Texas Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association service for a director, James Lewis and Dean Farwell.
Frigo,
I'm sorry, Frigo. And the resolutions are on page 22. But on 2-1, and Bart, if you would go through the recognition once on 2-1, and then we will move to 2-2 for the approval of the resolutions.
Be glad to.
Okay.
In preparation for this meeting, it's a little unfortunate. The last meeting that these gentlemen couldn't attend, and but we thought it'd be important to point out because a significant amount of time and the various roles that these two directors serve for the association. You see, Jim Lewis joined the board in 2008. He served as treasurer and as chair, and he was a chair for a significant period of time. He also served on the personnel committee for 2 different stints, but in total, Jim served 17 years on the board of directors, put a lot of effort into it. Dean Frigo served 18 years on there. He was treasurer of the association for 9 years and on the audit committee since 2008, but he chaired the audit committee for 14 years. So we think both of those directors, and those are your directors, you serve on the board, you know it's not a rubber stamp. We ask you to read a lot of material, have deliberations, take action. It's not perfunctory. There's some work to this. And for 17 years, 19 years, both these gentlemen dedicated a significant amount of time, and we wanted to recognize them formally in the records of the association.
Thank you very much. If you go to 2-2, and there are 2 resolutions, I will read the first one and ask for another board member to read the second one for a name. Whereas in appreciation of James Lewis, 17 years of service on the Texas Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association Board of Directors, including 9 years as board chair, 2 years as treasurer, 8 years on the audit committee, and 6 years on the personnel committee, it is resolved that the Texas Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association Board of Directors expresses sincere gratitude to Director Lewis for his exemplary service and commitment. Do we vote them individually? as spoken.
That's completely up to you.
Okay. So is there a motion for the and second? All in favor?
Who was the second, please?
Okay, thank you, Mark.
Okay, motion carried. So would any of you care to read a volunteer for Dane's resolution? Okay.
Whereas in appreciation of Dean Frito's 18 years of service from the Texas Life and Health Insurance Guaranty Association Board of Directors, including 17 years on the audit committee, but 14 of those years as the committee's chair, and 12 years on the assessment investment committee. It is resolved that the Texas Life and Health Insurance Guaranty Association Board of Directors expresses its sincere gratitude to Director Frigo for his exemplary service and commitment.
Thank you. Is there a motion?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Second. Mark and Frank, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay.
Thank you, motion carries. That brings us to item three. Consideration of possible action regarding any matters presented by the Texas Department of Insurance.
Well, I'm happy to say that we have no life and health insurance companies on the horizon for receiving.
Thank you. That's important. Item number four, consideration of possible action to instruct directors to fill officer and standing committee vacancies. And you can see on the page 41 and 42, you can see the current officers, current committees. There is a vacancy under the officers and executive committee. The vacancy is a treasurer.
Yes.
Position. And then on the assessment investment committee that Jim Harrison chairs and Ted Kitty serves, there's a vacancy of the assessment investment committee, audit committee. Mark, you've got that all covered by yourself. So there are two vacancies. There's one for chair and then a vacancy for a member. And personnel committee, chair is David Summer. Frank Bingham is on that committee. There is a vacancy there.
And Chair Huckabee, because I have, you know, it is a practice of the association, but the appointments are annual appointments.
Sorry.
To the committees and election of officers. And we do that every January.
Okay.
The way the timing of these vacancies fell, we thought it would be good. Go ahead and fill your vacancies. But be very aware that the vacancies build now at the end of October. When we get to January, those people may be asked to continue to serve in those roles.
And thank you for that. Okay, so and we're talking November and I November, December. How critical is it for us to appoint someone for 2 months and then do it again in January?
It is not critical for the officer position, for the treasurer position. Normally, I would say only if we anticipate we're going to need an executive committee action, and I don't have anything on the horizon. So the treasurer position is one that could be left vacant. And as you know, after this meeting, I will send around the guidelines for nominations for our officers. So we can leave that vacant and let that process unfold between now and the end of January.
Okay. Assessment Investment Committee. And so we have Jim and Ted.
And I will add here on the three committees that have vacancies, the Assessment Investment Committee and the Personnel Committee do have meetings scheduled before the next board meeting. So it would be very helpful to fill those vacancies. The audit committee would not meet again until March. So that's one that you could address in January. But assessment, investment, and personnel are important. Jeff Hill's there.
Hey, Bart, can I chime in, please?
Yes.
On the audit committee, do keep in mind we have an audit will be going on at the end of the year, and we're going to have an RFP for a new auditor also going on. So we do need a chair of that committee to deal with communication with the auditor.
Bill Eisenhorn.
Flash. I feel that that could be handled by the remaining committee member, Mr. Williams. The committee is not going to be asked to take any action before March. This would just be communications to the auditor. So thank you, Jared, but they could leave that vacant.
The auditor will need to do an interview with the committee chair prior to finalizing the audit, which is typically done in January.
March, we had to fill that role. But I would say this, consider on the committees any appointments and filling the Tuesday, that will probably just continue in June.
Yes. All right, then personnel committee. So David is chair, Frank served on the committee, and there is a vacancy. So is that something we need to have someone serve?
Yes.
Well, I will throw my name in, and we'll be happy to see an interim into January.
I'm not hearing much opposition.
I didn't use the word interim.
No. I definitely made note of that too.
Yeah, it's a great thing. They do great things, and I've served on it for I don't know how many years, but it was enjoy the time.
So we could, if it's all right with you, we could fill in the entire slate and take one action for all of them.
Yes.
AI,
and for the Assessment Investment Committee.
Which is currently Harrison Kennedy.
Yeah. Anyone else interested in serving on Assessment Investment?
Okay.
Thank you, Lord. And Mark Williams is the vacancy on the AI committee.
Mm-hmm.
The audit committee, Mark has agreed to serve as chair for that. And you said we should be okay with what person into January or?
We could, unless there's a volunteers one way to fill out the committee today, just assuming that they would be willing to continue serving next year.
I'll do a little volunteer.
Okay.
That's for the chair, Frank. Well, thank you very much. Anyone else? Okay.
So I see Mark Williams moving up, willing to serve as chair of the committee, and Frank Beeman serving. Was there a third member? I'll do it. Thank you. And Blake Roderson.
Yeah, looking back at his treasurer.
And I think, Chair, I'd be just comfortable leaving that vacant for now. And we do have that guideline and nomination process that we formally adopt where they can open it up to the entire board. Let's just use that process.
And for those who have joined us, within the last few months, would you mind just going over that process, kind of timeline, what you said now?
Right. So either the first week in November, I send out the document with the guidelines for nominations for the officers that the board adopted several years ago and allow someone to confidentially nominate someone to be an officer or self-nom. And those remain confidential. I gather them, then we give about a month. So until the end of November, sometimes the mid-December, or those nominations come in. Then I contact anyone that's nominated and make sure they're willing to serve. Once we have that, then we'll complete the slate, and it will be on the agenda for the January 27th meeting.
And for clarification on the executive committee, it requires one public member.
One public representative on the board must be an officer of the association.
Okay.
And that's all disclosed in the qualifications and the guidelines.
Any other questions? I mentioned from Boyd. So that process will start really next week.
Yeah.
Probably. All right, let's move to.
What do we have to make it out?
I'm sorry. Is there a motion?
I'm going to be your parents.
Okay. 10 seconds.
And 10 seconds. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion. Thank you. All right, let's get on. Item number 5, consideration of possible action regarding the issuance of a request for proposal to select and engage an independent certified public accounting firm to audit the financial statements of the Texas Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association for the year ended December 31, 2026.
So we did include in your materials the language from just administrative code, I believe it is.
Yes.
From the administrative code, it requires the association to replace its auditor every 7 years. Now, clarification here, and this came up several years ago, we did make sure and approach the Department of Insurance when we see that an auditor cannot serve them more than 7 years. Let's define the auditor and the roles here. So an incumbent individual cannot serve after 7 years, but the firm can continue so long as the audit partner is replaced. So, and we have used that. Clifton Morrison Allen has done the audit of the association for the last 14 years, but two different partners have served as the lead on that audit. So we just want to make sure you have that clarification that it's not clearly stated in the reg, but there's a little adjustment in the timing here. In the past, we have always engaged the auditor at the October meeting to perform the audit. But to assist with the implementation of GASB standards as they're implemented, it would be helpful to engage the auditor in April. And that auditor can then provide guidance on implementation of the GASB pronouncements that come out. Without that, they really can't offer any assistance in implementation of the GASB because they're not engaged. So we've shifted that time. So the RFP, although it's the same process we've used for a couple of decades here, it has shifted in time. So what the ask of the board is today is we provided you with a draft of the RFP package, and we provided you with the timeline of how it would be distributed and when we would then bring proposals back. You'll see this. The audit committee would consider proposals in April. Is that right, Jared?
Yes. The committee will see, look at the proposals in April, correct.
And there's an involved process. We usually have a proposers conference. That way, anyone that's interested in the position, we have a conference that they can attend remotely. So any questions to ask, all interested firms can hear the question and hear our answers, just for consistency, to make sure we offer opportunity to any interested firm. The engagement that we're operating under right now does cover the year in 2025 financial statements, and that's the last year that the current auditor of the CLA, Clifton Morrison Allen, can perform that audit. This would be for the audit beginning at year end or the year end 2026 financials. Let's make real clear what we're looking at. Sometimes it kind of run together on you. But this meeting was just to offer the board the opportunity to look at the RFP, see if there were any changes that you might want to implement. Normally, this will be handled by the audit committee. The audit committee just reports to the board. But with no audit committee currently until we took action a few minutes ago. We have a couple of audit committee items on the agenda at this point, but this is one.
Any other questions or board?
Just real quick, so the current firm is giving a new partner for this upcoming audit?
No, the one being performed that they'll be doing right now for the year end 2025 is the same partner.
Okay.
They can propose for this RFP that we're about to open and submit a proposal to be considered in April, and that would begin with the year end 2026.
Gotcha. Audit. So we could end up with a new firm or
a new partner.
New partner. Okay.
Yeah, they can submit to the prior partner. It was 7 years ago as well. Ask her again.
It's just 7 consecutive years.
And let me add to that real quick. We have 16 audit firms on our list that we'll send this to. If anybody knows of one or has a recommendation, we are more than willing to take that so we can send them an RFP as well.
So, Chair Huckabee, there's no action today other than for us to solicit any adjustments and edits to the RFP, either to the package that we're going to distribute or to the tentative timeline.
I see the resolution on 5-6, page 5-6, on the issuance of RFP for auditors for the year beginning 2026 audit.
That's a little bit of suspended. We can do it.
Okay.
Chair, and I went back and forth. I don't think it's necessary, but we'll do it.
So we don't need to take action
on that. Yeah, if you'd like to throw that.
Okay. All right, there's the resolution on 5-6. Resolved that the board directs Everybody have 5-6.
Yeah.
Is there a motion?
Mm-hmm.
And Frank, second?
Second.
All right, Blake, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right, the motion carries. There's also a resolution on page 6-5 for adoption of the audit plan calendar year 2026.
And this is the second of three items that the audit committee would have addressed prior to this meeting, that we're asking the board to address. The audit plan is shown on pages 6-2, 3, and 4 of your materials. No significant alterations in that audit plan that we used in prior years. And as normal practice, we implement the audit plans required by statute that after adoption, file it with the Commissioner of Insurance. Then after the audit is completed for the current year, and this will happen in April, we ask the audit committee to look at the findings from the audit. Is there anything in those findings that would warrant an adjustment in the audit plan that's been adopted and followed? So, it's a guiding document that we use to oversee and more or less lead our audit activities for the coming calendar year. And Chair Huckabee, you're right. There's a motion for consideration on 6-5.
I know we used it the other. Is there a motion for resolution on 6-5?
Ted moves.
Ted moves. Second. Mark. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
The motion carries. Thank you. That brings us to item number 7, consideration of possible action on selection of firm to perform network penetration testing.
So the network penetration testing is an activity the board led by the audit committee has undertaken every other year for quite some time now. And we send out an RFP on this to a number of firms. Jared, how many firms were included this time in the RFP?
We sent out 10 firms, I believe.
And we will not discuss the proposals, four proposals. We won't mention the firms here publicly. The proposals were posted for the board to review on the portal, along with a quick summary that Jared assembled. So you can compare key elements of those proposals and identify any of the proposals that had maybe performed this testing for the association in the past. Derek and I have been through these. We have a recommendation, but I'd like to ask them to the board if they have any questions of this or have any thoughts, any specific proposal. We normally do not mention the firm name
right.
until the engagement and the action's been taken by the board, but we're ready to do that. We'll be glad to provide you with our recommendation first. If any questions from the board. Or Jared, if there's anything on the process that you might want to throw in.
No, I don't have anything extra to add.
No, I think it's interesting that if you look at, to do this work, a number of firms discuss this, whether it's called and had questions, but if you look at the range in fees to do this work from $5,500 to over $26,000. So there's a different perspective among the firms about what's required and what's necessary, but we did get into the details of how they would do their testing and what they would report. And I believe we've come to a good balance of what might be appropriate for the association.
I just like to mention Kate and Bob from the movie.
So, questions?
Well, there's resolution on 7-2. Do we handle that in a second question?
We can handle it now.
If we're selected. Do you want to, does anybody want to discuss any of the specifics by name, who it is, between or among?
If you want to have a discussion of any of the details and we were talking about specific firms, we can do that executive session. Okay. You can handle this after it's up to the board.
What's your favorite pleasure? And this is me, I mean, we've added new members, and I think it would be good to have a few minutes to ask questions. There might be who did last year, what type of work they did.
Okay.
So let's table that for executive session.
Table.
Well, item number 8 is definitely an executive session item, this consideration. And I read the language in this second.
Hang on just a minute.
I'm sorry.
Ted may want to make a few comments just in the public record about the meeting the committee had and anything there about the process.
Sure. I'm happy to do so. So the executive director search committee met yesterday. I'll provide a brief summary for an open session and also ask Bart and Dan if they have any comment. And then, Chair, as you suggest, we'll further discuss the particulars in executive session. But I'll just remind the board, after having undergone the initial solicitation, while we received two perhaps qualified candidates, wanted to make sure that we were doing our fiduciary duty, our due diligence in capturing all interested parties. So we expanded the search to also consider independent contractors as well as staff employees for the role, and did a resolicitation. So yesterday we did, I'll say three things. We reviewed the revised package that was sent. We then reviewed the solicitation process for the second solicitation and are happy to report that in addition to those two prior submissions, we received 5 additional submissions. So we now have 7 candidates that were brought before the committee. Interestingly, none of those additional 5 took advantage or opportunity to opt for independent contract. So we just gave ourselves a greater opportunity to have more interest in our preference, a higher position. So we'll discuss an executive session, the committee's determination with respect to those 7 applicants. But then we went on to discuss the evaluation criteria that the committee is going to use for in interviewing those candidates and discuss to a certain degree, the questions that we're going to entertain and discuss with those candidates through the interview process. Finally, we look to the interview schedule. Due to committee limitations, we're going to defer those interviews until January, but I'll tell the board that does not throw us off of our original timeline. So we still hope to be able to come back to this board in January with the results of that interview process and proceed through the timeline. Bart, do you want to discuss that or anything else with respect to the meeting yesterday?
No, and I think you're very accurate. The timeline is engagement or the selection of the replacement executive director could occur on January 27th, assuming the committee's comfortable with their interview process, with then the goal being used February and March. Any refinements in the engagement, thinking that the engagement can be finalized, if not by the April board meeting, at the April board meeting. So roughly at the end of the first quarter. That way, the remainder of the year, based on the skills and experience of the selected individual, they will have roughly 8.5 to 9 months to work with me as we walk through the rest of the activities, the associations. We can transition very carefully and fully, so someone very comfortable with that will take the first 2027.
Dan, anything to add? You were the one selecting these applications.
Nothing official to add, that's right.
So we'll discuss those particulars with respect to the applicants and the decisions made for interview process, the executive session, for chairman. That's all I have.
Thank you. Anything else in the regular session? Can we recess for the executive session? And topic, if not, I will bring it over.
So, again, can we get out language?
The time is 9:03 a.m. on October 28, 2025, and I'll recess in the regular session of the Board of Directors meeting of the Texas Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association in order for the board to meet in executive session pursuant to the Texas Open Meetings Act. The time is 11 a.m. on October 28, 2025. The Executive Center for the Texas Planning and Health Insurance Guarantee Association Board of Directors meeting has concluded, and I will reconvene in the regular session of the board of the meeting pursuant to the Texas Open Meetings Act. So does that bring us to item 10, consideration of possible action for items discussed in the executive session?
Yes, sir. And what I put on screen is the holdover item from item 7 that you want to make sure you discuss those proposals in executive session. So I have the resolution on screen for you to fill in the company if you're interested.
Okay, we will entertain a motion regarding the resolution. It's on the screen, and those of you who can't see this on 7.2.
So, and let's insert in the blank CLA the firm Clifton Larson Allen.
Who made the motion?
The motion by Beamer.
Right. Okay.
Clifton Larson
Allen.
All right, the resolution has been properly a motion, second, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Motion carries. Anything what the next part?
That's all. We can move on to 11.
Okay. 11. Quarterly report from executive director on TLIGA activities.
And a couple of these items have been touched on under other agenda matters. Of the vacancies, we have two director vacancies on the board after Jim Lewis and Dean Frigo elected not to seek reappointment. Their terms expired on September 30th. We have been in contact with the Department of Insurance, Caitlin Bain, and I understand that the department is underway trying to identify replacements for those two individuals. Then the assessment appeal is still pending. This was submitted as a Class B assessment appeal from our 2024 assessment, and no action has been taken on the appeal by the Commissioner of Insurance, of course, it's appealed to the Commissioner, but also we understand the commissioner nor the association has had any contact with this company since they submitted some revised meeting numbers in February of this year. Then at the end of my report, I'll just have a little bit of information about some NOLGA meetings and other meetings. Last week, skip the one, the NPC meeting we had in DC, that was back in July, but last week we had the NOLGA NPC and annual meeting in San Antonio, and Chair Huckabee, Jim Harrison, Jarek Topping, Dan, and I all attended. We also had an iAir one-day workshop on Tuesday before the NOLGA meetings, and Dan Topping, Jarek, myself, and Sean from TDI, including I think five others from TDI, attended as well. Seemed to be a worthwhile event, and everyone hopefully took something away from that workshop. So
within five, you had seven. Jamie.
Oh, that's right. You have seven. Yeah, and the department did not only attend, but we department presented during the meeting, and some former department personnel as well. And the commissioner did deliver the welcome remarks just to kick off the conference. So it was good to have Commissioner Brenner there. So it was a nice event and a busy week last week in San Antonio. The next round of meetings will be coming up December, I believe it's 8th through 11th, the NEIC meeting in Hollywood, Florida. So we'll be preparing for that. There'll be other meetings. The next NOLGA NPC meeting will be in mid-January. I believe that's also in Florida. I forgot the location. I didn't put it into the board. But I will distribute information when the registration opens. If any of board members interested in attending the NPC meeting, there are a lot of hearing association activities now. The NPC meeting is a good way to see how our issues explored. How do we turn about it? How are these resolutions that are presented to you for consideration, how they get developed? So if any board member would like to attend an NPC meeting, the association would like to cover your expenses. And Chair Huckabee, that's all I have.
That item 12 next?
Yes. We do have several items here we need to address. So a couple of these insolvencies I'm going to touch on very quickly. First, the summary on the insolvencies. I won't bother going through in some of the details on the summary reports. That information is captured on page 12.1 of the materials, and then there's some subsequent reports that talk about some of our overall claims numbers for year to date and premium receipts and complaints, other items like that. Not a lot to say on complaints because we haven't had any. So let me move forward and talk about specific insolvencies. I'm going to begin with the two health insurance insolvencies that we are wrapping up. We are glad to be wrapping those up. Right now, on Bright Healthcare Insurance Company of Texas, we have no pending appeals. We have no pending claims. We have addressed everything. We had a recent settlement Dan and I worked out on a claim that was submitted by a provider, submitted about 200 a little over 200 claims. And with the proof of claim to the SDR referred it to us. But I looked, we'd only seen three claims for that individual and that provider. And what we found is that 90 of the claims submitted by the provider were unique. All the other ones were duplicates. Some are three and four and five duplicates for the same service and the same date to the same people. So once we trimmed it all down and went through it, some of the claims had already been paid. Some of them were outside of the coverage for the individual. And so out of about $65,000 or $70,000 of amounts being sought, what did we pay? $9,000? We found about $9,000 of proper payments, and the provider was glad to get it. So with that, we don't have anything pending on Bright. We are waiting for the proof of claim process to continue with the receiver, because through their proof of claim process, sometimes there are claims identified that there are questions on the process and the payments that we have. So any challenges to come up with, evaluate, that's really all we have left to do. With that, we are about $1.8 million underwater from the insolvency. but we have told the receiver that we are going to wait until the process is further along, and then we would like to make a final request for an early access distribution. We fully anticipate that all of our admin expenses and all of our claims obligations will be fully reimbursed, and this will be at no cost to state to the association. Okay. Moving on, the next insolvency is the other health insurance company, Friday. Larger insolvency. We've had 167,000 claims or appeals we've addressed. We've paid over $27.5 million of benefits. Our admin expenses have been quite high because of the several different administrative solutions we've had to address here and the problems we have with negotiating agreement with vendors that had substantial unpaid amounts by the company before liquidation. So you can see $14.7 million in expenses. But right now, with the distributions we've received from early access distributions from the receiver, we're a little over $4 million to be positive, but we are not quite finished. We have been working through, we finished all the claims and appeals. Where we are what we call the spreadsheet submissions from the providers, where providers submit list of claims that they feel they were not paid the proper amount or were never addressed. So just to let you know, we have 10 providers that submitted claims to us, a little over 21,000 claims through these spreadsheets, seeking $35.4 million in what they call outstanding receivables. One of those providers with 115 claims and $1.6 million in receiver, when we asked them for their support, provided nothing. So we closed their submission. Then seven providers, at the time we were working with this report, we had resolved their $19.1 million in outstanding receivables with settlements totaling $1.5 million. We recently completed another one. The provider was seeking $1.6 million, and we made a payment to them of over $32,000. And a lot of these, it boils down to they may have in their account receivable amounts they feel they're due, but after we research it, they may have missed payments that have been made by the company or payments that we made. They may have not properly got all the repricing on the in-network claims. They may have failed to realize some of these were taking responsibility and deduct things of that nature. So we, in researching it, say, okay, your accounts receivable is a little bit off. You're missing business. That's, once we fill in the blanks, go through it with them, receivable amounts comes considerably down. And also, they're asking for full bill charges. And that's not appropriate. Once we work through them, we process the claims. Per their network participation agreement, they're due much less. We have one final and the largest spreadsheet submission yet to resolve, and it's pending. This provider originally submitted 9,985 claims seeking a little over $13 million from us. After well over a year of back and forth trying to clarify for the provider, your data is somewhat flawed. You're missing information. We gave them detailed lists and explanations. Here's what you're missing. Here's what you're missing. The math doesn't work, guys. It doesn't add up. Go back and look at your spreadsheet. So they had spreadsheet issues, they had submission issues, they had missing information. They recently resubmitted a list of only 1,676 claims seeking $4.9 million. We've gone through that list. We've sorted many of those were claims involving dates of service after coverage had been terminated. We threw those out. And then a lot of these are not timely submissions. Then we've allowed the provider, you can document the claim when the appeal was submitted timely. We'll be glad to consider that right now. No, they're not timely. And there were a handful that we found that claims should have been reprocessed and were not pre-receivership. So we reprocessed them and we've made a settlement offer to them. And it's on the table. It's a very nominal amount. Can't disclose this because it's subject to ongoing discussions. This issue is with the provider that the receiver is pursuing a very large overpayment balance with. And the provider wants to lump the two together, but they are separate. So they need to resolve their overpayments with the receiver and decide whether they want to accept our settlement on their claim submission. So the special master specifically asked for a status report from the SDR and from the Marriage Association on this, on the handling of the matter with this provider. We provided two status reports on this. So
about another one by the end of the week.
Okay, another one coming up because we have a status conference coming up next week, next Friday. So the special master is aware of dispute ongoing with this provider. We also did some research to assist the receiver. We took the top seven claims from their provider list on the overpayments. This one provider, seven claims out of 6,700. Seven claims out of 6,700 represented 24% of the overpayments. And we accumulated all the EO keys associated with the processing associated with that overpayment and wrote 10 or 12 page summary, a roadmap. Here's how this overpayment arose. Here's how it ties back to the receiver's balance. The receiver has since provided that to that provider. And it's boiled down to an issue of, who said, notice? Not get into it. Okay, we'll get into it. It's a legal issue, contractual issue, not the data issue.
Are y'all are y'all providing your report to the Sandra, to the master, to the copy of the Sandra?
We have. We've only given summary information.
I don't recall whether I don't believe I copied Sandra off the both stuff in master's.
Do you mind copying Sandra on that to make sure she gets it?
We're fine with that.
Yep.
Thank you. I mean, just our summary.
I'm sure Greg shared it with her, but just in case he didn't, so she didn't grab it.
Yeah, I did, just to be clear for the record, I did not blast the entire service list. But so. Yeah.
But that is public comment.
So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
It shouldn't be any.
Sure.
Thank you.
We think we've made a very fair settlement based on what they submitted. But that's the only thing we got that confirmed. The receiver has in the same position as Brian is still going to approve some claim. There may be issues come up there. We haven't had any forwarded to us to evaluate. So as with any health insurance insolvency, it's basic bump up. And we'll see what we end up. These are almost completed. Let's move on to some matters we need to take action on. The two most active insolvencies right now nationally, Bankers Commercial and Colorado Bankers. I just want to give you some information here on first, let me go down to claims obligations right here. 50 claims batches through September 30th have been paid. Remember, the first batches didn't come out until January. So 54 batches of claims since January in 9 months. This association has funded $77.6 million in claims. Nationally, the Guarantee Association system has paid out almost $1.4 billion. Now, this is not in lump sum funding in assumption reinsurance transactions. These are individual death benefits, annuity surrenders, and 1035 exchanges. That's a lot of processing. So we've been very busy. We have weekly batches, monthly batches, because some of these are required minimum distributions, interest-only payments. There's a lot of complexity to this block. I serve on an admin study group that meets weekly with TBA over issues they're having to make sure we're current. When we started in January, the queue of items we filed hit over 18,000. And yesterday, it was less than 100. And some of those are just beneficiary changes, address updates. I looked, we have absolutely no surrenders, no exchanges pending in Texas. We're current on claims. So what's disappointing is there are a large number of these annuity contract holders that have reached the end of their guarantee periods. Interface by contract now dropped to 1%. They're not surrendering. They're not exchanging. They're sitting there. We didn't anticipate this. So let me get into two, actually we have three matters that are not on the list because we've just finished negotiating them. They haven't even gone through the NVC process and gone out under an opt-out yet. NVC will be considering them on November 7th. But because we have this meeting scheduled, I got all the information we needed. I'm going to ask you to consider them today. So, a subgroup of the Bankers Task Force, and I do serve on it. I'm not on the task force. They asked me to serve on this subgroup because it's an assumption in the insurance office, and I've been doing those transactions. Offered the life insurance business of Colorado Bankers to an assumption reinsurance office. And after a very long due diligence process, and I think there were seven or eight companies that were in there looking and kicking the tires, a company was selected. And I will mention the company in a minute because I just got a text a moment ago that says the company has agreed I can disclose who they are. We have come to terms to transfer these life policies. But during the development of this, we started to see the problem. We have all these annuity surrenders that aren't happening. These annuities are just sitting there. Let's approach this company that was going to take the life insurance policies. And those life insurance policies do have annuity riders, some of them. Let's ask them to also take these standalone annuities that are just sitting there. We put them in the assumption reinsurance agreement and try to get all of our bankers in Colorado business, Colorado Bankers business transferred to another carrier. They agree. So the assumption has been expanded, and this company is going to take the life insurance business with annuity riders and the remaining standalone annuities that have not surrendered or exchanged. So that company is a local company here in Austin. It's Continental General Insurance Company. Continental General is a substantial long-term care, I would say, pretty much a monoline long-term care company. So having that company purchase a block of business for life and annuity business is very good diversification. Plus, they've made a very attractive bid. And they do have administration capabilities to handle that problem. They've recently expanded some of their administration into other lines of business. So this transaction is, as I mentioned, going to be pushed through the NPC process. On November 7th, 30-day opt-out will be started with the intention to try to close and fund this transaction before year end. And the department may or may not be aware of this transaction. It's the first time I've mentioned it publicly, but your dealings with companies here in Texas are your dealings. So that
may mention.
Okay. So I just wanted you to know that this is not only a good transaction for the life business, but also give this other business. We don't have any ongoing administration. I'd like to say I have final numbers. I do not have final numbers yet. Okay. But it is a good transaction. Roughly, we have approximately $5 million of reserves to transfer on the life side. And Jared, can you recall what's remaining for us? Is it around $12 million for annuities? Is that right?
That sounds about right. I'd have to look it up to know for sure.
It was in the $12 to $15 million range. But, you know, that number is going to shift a little bit when we get to the closing, but bring all the numbers forward to the closing. So, and this is going to be a transaction. I want to go with all three of these transactions and we'll actually consider them at once. Before we get off of it, we'll let you know we've had an interesting wrinkle in Bankers that we've not had before. And I can't go into a lot of the details. I can only say publicly, Monday before I got ready to go to the meetings in San Antonio, I got a subpoena from a grand jury in the county just north of Houston, forwarded, asking for a long list of specific annuity documents for a specific annuity policy order. And when I started digging into the sponsor, I saw we paid this person a substantial death benefit last June. And what's the issue? All we can say, and Dan's had a conversation with the investigator for the sheriff's department in that county, it's very possible that pre-receivership, there were fraudulent documents submitted to alter policy records so the beneficiary being paid was not the correct payment. So Dan's got some additional work to do with that investigator and gather more information before we can determine exactly what our obligation is and how this can be remedied. Just unique things come up all the time. Okay, the second transaction I might ask you to consider here is as part of this transfer of the assumption reinsurance, there was an indemnity reinsurance agreement that we agreed to continue. And this only involved Bankers Life. It's with a company called Clear Springs Life and Annuity Company. 100% coinsurance. So under our statute, we have the right to secede to the position of the company and assume all obligations and benefits of the reinsurance agreement, which we did some time ago. So specific claims that we paid for Bankers Life annuities that were subject to this reinsurance agreement, we have been getting reimbursements, 100 cents on the dollar from that reinsurance. Well, now if we transfer the business to this new carrier, the Clear Spring reinsurance agreement, the new carrier does not want. So we have developed and are recommending a commutation of that reinsurance agreement. And as of the point in time, any remaining reserves on that business, they will 100% fund to us. And it's other guarantee associations, but we will get our fair share. So that reinsurance continuation benefited us greatly, but I'm going to ask you to approve the termination and commutation of that reinsurance agreement. And the third thing is a simple early access agreement. There has been a development involving Greg Lindberg and some assets, and I have to keep this to the public information. There's a company called Plan William. And this is a company not owned by the insurance companies. It's owned by Lindberg. And so the special master handling this criminal case was able to develop the sale of this transaction. Well, the third time around, first two times it fell apart. They're able to develop a sale. It closed at the end of September. What's important on this, there's about $300 million that is going to benefit from this. Now, how is it going to be paid? And we have a lot of research on this. Only the $30 million. Only about $30 million goes to the North Carolina insurance companies that are in receivership. $170 million goes to the individual policyholders and contract holders that have values above guaranteed association coverage limits. They are going to get paid in full. So anyone that had coverage above our limits, that we didn't cover, you know, to handful of policies we could not cover, they are going to get full recovery. Now, it's not today. It's going to be as of their November 30th, 2024 values without interest one-fourth. We don't know exactly when the special master will distribute those funds, but we know at least soon. With that resolution, those uncovered claimants or partially uncovered claimants that both have classes, they're not going to have claims in the receivership. So only creditors in the receiverships, guarantee associations. So that clarifies some ongoing disputes that the receiver is trying to wrestle to the ground. And so the receiver has now agreed to release early access funds. And the early access application was filed last week for the $500 million federal insurance associations. Well, I'm going to ask you today to participate in the early access program so we can get our fair share of the $500 million. And that's not, there will be more money later. We thought initially it was going to be a $700 million early access distribution. In the court order, it's only $500 million. So they're still holding back. But it's very complicated with a criminal case. And a federal case, initially we were a little concerned about the precedent of these uncovered claimants getting full recovery, where guarantee associations were normally in the receivership, were shoulder to shoulder. They get 50 cents on the dollar, we get 50 cents on the dollar. The federal statutes have a different priority for individual claimants.
Question mark. These 170 million of those Texas policy.
Yeah.
Actually, what was the name of the company?
Plan William. I can send you a press release on it.
Thanks.
That they put out. I actually think I have a quote. I have to look.
It's the retribution priority scheme. So essentially, a retribution for the federal legal system.
I'm familiar with that because we've got a similar situation.
So, yeah, for the rest of the board, the retribution scheme does allow, if you have other coverage, kind of like we've got the other insurance coverage and all the guarantee acts, if you have this other coverage, it's going to provide for covering those claims we have in the guaranteed location. They don't get restitution. There's something there to care of those people. That's the essentially why it's out there. And then the uncovered people don't have guarantees of getting covered. So the federal priority is in the restitution side is a coverage.
Yeah, maybe we can chat after.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we've got some of that, a lot of analysis. But long story short, the claim lien transaction takes care of those people, but that also opens up the floodgates for us to get some monies out of the state. It's fine. So we have the assumption reinsurance agreement, the commutation of the indemnity reinsurance agreement, and the early access agreement for you to consider on Bankers and Colorado Bankers. And I have resolutions on them that are not in your packet, but I wrote them last night. No, they're not in there. This just came up, and I actually got drafts about 8 o'clock last night from my attorney. I finished them at 2:30 this morning. Sorry. This is the agreement for the assumption reinsurance. And do you want me to put each one of them up, that you look at each one carefully and adopt all three, or do them one at a time?
Yeah. And these are not part of your packet now.
They're not in the packet.
You might share them.
No, I'll be glad to share them.
Thank you.
This is the assumption reinsurance agreement. This is for the termination of the Clear Spring indemnity reinsurance agreement. Now, it's a little bit longer because you have to say, you know, how the heck did you get here with Clear Spring and all this? And then the last one is the simple just participation in the early access agreements for each company. So Dan has reviewed these. He's tweaked a little language. You know, the resolutions we got were for all Guaranty Associations and the Task Force for Accreditation, the NBC, and the NBC adoption for the Guaranty Associations to consider. So some of this is first impression language we had to draft ourselves, but it's consistent with how we've handled similar transactions in the past. We're just a little bit out ahead of the other Guaranty Associations.
Is there a motion?
So moved.
Second, Ted.
Frank and Kay.
Oh, we're doing all three together. Is that how we?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Any questions or comments before we call for the vote? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Motion carries. Okay. Thank you, Lord, for sacrificing your sleep.
So,
Dan.
There is, I included Southland Insurance Corporation in your packet. The hopeful transaction that we are working on would be ready by this meeting. It is not. It's an assumption insurance transaction we're working through. There's some due diligence. Issue yet to be addressed. The schedule we're targeting to have this ready in the first quarter of 2026. So I doubt this is going to be ready for January. It may be something you see in April. So it's precautionary to include the company, just no action for it. And so I won't go into the details. Let's move on to a company that I do have two items going to ask you to consider. One's in your material. One's a new one. There's a lot of activities after last week's meeting in San Antonio. North Carolina Mutual Life Insurance Company. And this company has been in liquidation since 2022. So the end of October 2022, so a full 3 years. And one of the things we had here, there was a block of business with just horrendous records. That there's a company called Equitrust. You will remember Equitrust. We did an assumption agreement. We had some miscommunications with the department, but we got ironed out. So Equitrust assumed a block of business. And for the business that had bad address, we didn't have addresses to contact people, they were administering that business. And as claims came due, there's a flat fee they charged each Guaranty Association, claim by claim by claim. Not a bad deal. Well, on one block of the business, as a universal life business, the records were very, very bad. And we did not even have capabilities to bill the correct amount of premiums. And there was missing data if you calculated some of the cost of insurance charges that he deducted under a universal life policy. So some of these policies were getting to the point that the cost of insurance was truly the values of the policy for about to lapse. And we couldn't contact the policy or didn't know how to get in touch with them. And it's just really disservice that they had this service. if this policy and it's about to fall away. So, and we only have about 130 of these in Texas, and we're like the third largest, most effective hearing association. Mm-hmm. North Carolina has the most, and it's a couple of thousand. Everybody else has a triple. What is being recommended, and I do support it, is that we amend the service agreement with Equitrust. And under that amendment, we are going to implement a settlement offer that they will distribute for us. And in that settlement, we will apply all that we're going to offer them this. This is your 1031-22 liquidation date account value or cash value. We will pay you that value plus any premiums you have paid. You can see in the records you paid since that day. No interest on it. We're just going to give you that value as that day and that premium. We're not deducting any cost of insurance charges. We just give you that value and you can use that and we'll settle it. It's just we don't have the ability to properly administer this business. And this seems like the most equitable means to return some value to the policyholders and get out from under the kind of a horrendous administration nightmare. And then for Texas, it's, I want to say it's around $140,000 in total settlement value. It's not much at all. So I'm asking in this situation, do you participate in the amendment of that service agreement to implement this settlement offer to the policyholders? They should jump at it. If anyone said no, we're going to have to figure something else out. We don't have it. If they say no, we don't have another page right now. And second item, and this is a resolution I've drafted to amend that agreement with Equitrust for the Universal Life business. Second agreement is something we did at the last meeting for another company. Southland National at the last meeting, now it's been negotiated for North Carolina Mutual. And what happens with these liquidators, when we really can't nail down all of our liabilities exactly and precisely, they're hesitant to release funds. They just hold back monies and won't do substantial early access distributions. So what's been negotiated is that the claims covered by the hearing associations, we will accept a fixed claim against this state of $147 million and change. And then there will be $226,000 of uncovered claims. We will agree that that is their fixed claim against the estate. And we will cap our administrative expenses. We will not pursue anything above $5 million as an admin claim against the estate. And the receiver's on board with this. Like I said, we just did it for Southland National a quarter ago. And it's a very clean way to resolve some of these runoff on messy estates. We don't know. We really just can't come up with all the numbers. So we have these two transactions for you to consider. Revising the service agreement for the UL block to offer these policyholders a settlement. And then the fixed claims agreement with the liquidator.
Okay, besides on the screen, it's also my book on 1220 and 1221. Is there a motion to approve the resolutions?
We're doing two together?
Two together.
I'll move to the resolution. Okay.
Second.
Okay. Dan Blake, all in favor?
No.
All right. Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you. And the last thing, this is a simple report. As I mentioned, we're 8.5 years into entry. We have a quarterly business review with the TPA at our meeting this afternoon. We still have ongoing claims issues to work through. As I mentioned, we've got surveillance going on two of our claimants in Texas. I'm also helping on that with other states. We have our electronic visit verification program working out pretty well. It identifies a lot of problems within. And these are primarily not, none of them are agency providers. These are care providers that are family caregivers or private caregivers. And in the EBV program, when they check into the app, they're not where they report they are. on the app with the GPS locating, we know where some of them are out of the country. And so it's basic fraud. Okay. And we are not trying to catch people. Our intent is let's make sure our claimants are getting the care that they need. A lot of them are not getting care and they're paying for it because their policy benefits are being paid out. So we're trying to protect claimants here. But what has happened in Penn Treaty? One very important thing and one thing I promoted, and we're trying to get a call on to get this ball rolling. So what's happened? We just inked a 20-year extension on our service agreement with Davies. And in that, the good thing is we locked in some pricing. We were coming up with the renewal of Davies' contract was in 2026, but in the window during the period of open negotiations, it went ahead and started. We did an early renewal to capture these rates and the incremental adjustments in rates each year tied to our market indices, let's say our labor index. So we think it is worthwhile and it's helpful. With that, there's a long-term administration contract in place. They can be transferred. And we have 8.5 years of experience in this block. We had a substantial rate increase we've implemented. And we're at a point, I suggest that there's not a better time to test the waters to see if we can do an assumption insurance transaction, get out of a long-term administration for this block. There's just under 30,000 policies. We've just gone over right at $2 billion in payments. Maybe another billion to pay. So I suggested that we offer the Penn Treaty block, but while we're doing it, let's do a garage sale. We also have long-term care business left over from the National States Insurance Company Consultancy, from the what they call LAHICA, Life and Health Insurance Company of Pennsylvania, and another Pennsylvania company called Senior Insurance Company. So Senior American Insurance Company. And those blocks, 500 policies here, 800 policies there. Put them all in the same basket and see if we can get somebody to take it off. Guarantee associations are really not structured for long-term administration of any blocks of business. And let's just see, right now there's been a market for assumption reinsurance for long-term care business. Let's test the water. So that profit will be taken off. It's gonna take some time. But I want you to be aware before I bring something to you within the next 6 or 8 months, there could be an assumption proposal coming. And that's really all I have to report on Henry and all the companies. If there are any questions, we'd be glad to take them.
Yes, next is item 13, consideration possible action on government, corporate governance issues, directors feedback, directors discussion on board governance. Is there anything that any of you have that you'd like to bring up on item number 13? And some of you have been on the board longer than others, but on 13.1, a very interesting corporate governance issues, and there's some information on there just to let you know if you hadn't seen it in the book. Well, item 14, consideration of possible action regarding financial and accounting matters.
Jared, can you cover a couple highlights?
Sorry, Jared.
So starting on page 14.2 there, you can see our cash account has been going down, and that's primarily paying the Blick and Seabick claims and the other claims that we come along. So we see those balances going down. I want to touch on another item on that page down there at our accounts payable. You'll see a large increase in July. That was due to us closing the Bright claims account because those checks had been stale dated. And we had something around 200 checks and about $110,000 that have not been cashed. Those have been moved to unclaimed property. We will hold those for about a year. If anyone contacts us, we will reissue those checks. And then after about a year, we'll sheet those to the state of Texas. and the payees can claim those from the state of Texas. Any questions on that page? Moving to the next one. I just wanted to point out we've paid almost $78 million in claims this year. Most of that is the BLIC and CBLIC annuity claims, as Bart pointed out earlier. I believe you said it was around $77 million that we've paid out for those out of the $1.8 billion overall. I think that's pretty impressive for the first couple of months of this year.
Jared, let's point out, we had originally projected our annuity and life and policy list going to be around $98 million in costs for BLIC and CBLIC. We're going to end up being pretty close to that if we
yes.
do some transaction close.
All right, next page, please. So this is just pointing out that we still have one estate that is continuing to borrow. As Bart mentioned in his comments on Bright, we are not requesting early access until we kind of know the final number. Now, just be aware that this is not their actual balance. This is the difference between the beginning of the year and August 31st. So that is the change over the year. The actual balance is in note four, and it's about $1.4 million that Bright still.
While you're there, let me bump down to it.
Yeah. So it's, 1.385 that Bright currently owes, and that will be repaid once we get our final distribution from Bright.
Okay.
If you'll go back up. Oh, nope. There you go. Yeah, that one. So we did get new premium data in October, and so this is the updated schedule that we provide. Point out that we now, our assessment capacity is $1.8 billion, and you can see there that our prior capacity was 1.5, so a pretty substantial increase in our assessment capacity. And I believe that is all I have, unless anyone has any questions.
Thank you, Jared. It brings us to calendar of activities and next meeting date, 15-1. You look. What do you?
I would just want to point out the next meeting, but then point out, I think I'm going to change the presentation to the future meeting. Because right now, I can tell you January 27, 2026 is your next scheduled meeting. Now, if you look on the calendar of activities, we lay out all the committee meetings, tentative target meeting dates, all the board meeting dates. But I'm sorry, that's a lot for you to dig through. So I think I'm going to do a little abbreviated calendar to put on here. Here's the upcoming meeting dates for coming year. Here's the calendar for committee meetings, things like that. So you don't have to dig through all these various things that I use to track what's coming up and what kind of activities we have. So for now, let's just focus on January 27th. And on this final planning item, just be prepared. It'll be a different format than you see it next. It'll be easier, a little more user-friendly. I would ask if anyone has any conflicts they know now on January 27th. Let me know as soon as possible, and I'll start looking for it.
I'm good.
Not this year. Oh, I'm sorry. None at all. We were going to have some of the executive director search committee, but the schedule was set. We can't do it until January.
Last thing on my list, was there anything else?
I have nothing else today. So thank you. It's a long meeting, a lot of action. I want the board performed admirably.
Have a little sidebar here. So I know we looked at the calendar, we're anticipating two dates in early January for candidate interviews, and then a date thereafter before the board meeting for us to have a postmortem. Do we need to have a meeting, particularly if board members provide you any input in the next few days? Do we need to have a meeting before the interviews to get our ducks in a row for the interview process?
We can. I will mention this. It will be posted as an open meeting, and I believe that probably every item discussed is going to have to be executive session.
Correct.
So it would be a very confidential meeting. I believe there's probably a way that that can be shared via email as long as there's no deliberation. So we can send in other questions or areas that you'd like to be addressed in an interview. Just wait, be careful not to deliberate.
Right. Well, if you don't get any comments, we're not really changing what we have. I don't know how important that is. Maybe we could leave it as an open question for now. I want to look to the committee, but I would say if there's nothing substantively going to change, then we don't need a formal standalone meeting. We might meet as a committee maybe 30 minutes before that first interview just to get our ducks in a row.
Okay.
But if there is substantive change to the questions or other things, other suggestions from the board, then if you would let us know and we'll schedule a meeting.
Okay.
That sound good?
Yeah. And then we'll have a post.
And then afterward, definitely a formal meeting.
Post or formal post.
Absolutely. Right. And hopefully we'll evaluate the interviews and maybe consider a vote for the board.
That's awesome. Okay. That's awesome. AI and personnel will be probably about a week in advance of the board. I've got the schedule in here, so.
Good. All right, the time is 11:50 a.m. October 28, 2025, and this meeting of the Board of Directors of the Texas Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association that has been held pursuant to the Texas Open Meetings Act is conducted.